Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim R., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NABA Zoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NABA Zoom room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, James Lee, as he's got on his screen here from Tallahassee, Florida, is zoomed in. He's helped a lot of people. A lot of people have heard his story, and he's makes a big impact everywhere he goes. So that's not too much pressure for James. He's ready to start, and I'm going to turn it over to him. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. James Lee, alcoholic. Hi, everybody. The pressure's on. Oh, geez, Tim. I was thinking that may be overstating it a little bit. We'll see. I'm very glad to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really appreciate, Tim, that you would ask me to share here. So thank you. I really like the last reading that you guys did. It is, you know, it's not a custom for very many groups to read that. So it was very, very good to hear it. And I believe 100% that that is my job. You know, when I'm asked to share my story, you know, we call it experience, strength, and hope. We also call it what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. But I think the real purpose of sharing our stories is to describe in my own words, from my own point of view, how I established my relationship with God. And I really do think that's my job here. So I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. I don't know how good it's going to, how my ability is going to come out tonight, but we'll see. It's Monday night, you know, it's a tough night for, because I had a Monday work day today. But anyway, my sobriety is January 3rd, 1984. I got sober at the age of 21 and a half. I'll do the math for you. 36 years sober, 58 years old. So you don't have to worry about any of that. Yeah, I started drinking at 15 and I sobered up at 21 and a half. So I had a 6.5 year run there. I think I got sober young, I believe, because I got exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous early. But I'll tell you, I was not happy about it when I did. So I'll tell you about that. My mom's an alcoholic. She's sober in AA. Some of y'all may have heard her talk. Her name's Polly P, and she's kind of well-known in the AA circles. And anyway, she got sober in April 1977. I was 14 years old, and I remember pretty well those days. I'll just real briefly tell you that I watched my mom at the end of her king unsuccessfully attempts try to kill herself, and she failed, and she got sober. She's sober to this day. I learned a big lesson when I was 14, and the lesson was, alcoholics who drink will end up dying. That's exactly what happened to her. Really, she tried to die by suicide, almost succeeded. She flatlined in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. They resuscitated her, said, Polly, we suggest you don't drink again, and that was not her last drink. So I learned at the age of 14 that alcoholics who drink will eventually die. And then when she was in treatment, she went to treatment in April 77. I went to this gathering called Family Day there at the treatments facility, and I heard a therapist there, my mom's therapist, I guess, I guess her the purpose of the whole thing was to kind of try to describe mom's alcoholism and educate the family and stuff. And this woman said a lot of things that had impact on me. I'll tell you what they were. She said, you know, in an attempt to describe mom's alcoholism to us, she said, you know, alcoholics are people who are uncomfortable in their own skin. They walk around not feeling like they fit, they don't belong, and they just feel uncomfortable in the bodies in which they find themselves. And I'm going to tell you something, man. At the age of 14, I identified with that 100%. That was me, the age of 14. She further said, you know, alcoholics are people who have this idea of the way the world should be, this vision of the world. And it's really great, their vision. And if only everyone else would do as they're told, the world would be amazing. And you know what? I identified with that too. I had this image, this idea of how the world should be, and it wasn't. And if everyone just did what I wanted them to, it would be great. And you know, it says that right in our big book. It says that we're people who have this idea, and we try to get others to do our will, and we obviously fail. And when I fail to get you to do what I want you to do, guess what happens? I get resentments, by the way, just to let you know. And so I identified with that. She said a few other things. She said, alcoholics are perfectionists. And I identified with that, too, at the age of 14. And believe me, well into my sobriety, I identified with this characteristic. And it was like I would set this bar right way up here for myself, and I would never be able to reach that. And I beat myself up mercilessly. And I did that well into sobriety. She said alcoholics suffer from belligerence, defiance. Yeah, I identify with that. So I identify with all these things she was talking about. And then she said something that had a really big impact on me at the age of 14. She said, if you're a child of an alcoholic, you have a 50-50 chance of being an alcoholic yourself. And I have a brother, and I knew it was not going to be him. You know, I knew that if either of us is going to be alcoholic, it ain't going to be him. It's going to be me. So I was given at the age of 14, what the big book describes as self-knowledge. I knew if I drank, I'd be an alcoholic, and alcoholics who drink die. That was my experience. So I said, I'm never going to drink. And guess what? I didn't drink. It's amazing. I didn't drink for 5 whole months. And then came the day when I drank. September 1977, I was 15 years old. And I want to tell you, when I had that drink, my whole world changed. The kid that I brought to school the day that I drank during lunch hour, never made it back after lunch to school. But the kid that I brought to that drink was a kid who felt apart from and less than. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt everyone else knew how to live life, and I didn't know. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. And I took a drink, and everything changed in an instant. And I felt like I fit. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was somebody. And, you know, there's that line in Bill's story that I identified with that day and said, I had arrived. And what I didn't know this at the time. I didn't know until many years later. But what happened that day was I found the answer to every problem I ever had. And every problem I ever had was wrapped in this collective problem or this single problem called alcoholism. And what I found that it was the solution to my alcoholism. It's called alcohol. And I'm going to tell you, alcohol is the second best solution I ever found in my alcoholism. Because it worked. It fixed me, made everything okay. I was able to breathe. I felt like I belonged. I was able to talk to people. I was able to maneuver in the world. And, man, I loved it. I did everything. You know, and I guess I had this thought in the back of my head. You know, if you drink this thing, you're going to get an alcoholic and you may end up dead. And I said, I don't care. I just started that day. And I basically drank. I'm one of those who sought oblivion every time I drank. And that meant, and I wanted oblivion all the time. So I basically am one of those who was an everyday drinker. I also participated in what we call an AA outside issues. For me, it was marijuana and cocaine and all sorts of other drugs. So I had that experience. Hey, man, if you drank and if you were 15 in 1977, you would too. But I identify as an alcoholic because I have alcoholism. And alcohol is just the solution to my problems, I'm telling you. And it worked for a long time. Now, I want to tell you that, you know, we're talking about here how I established my relationship with God. First, however, I have to tell you I unestablished it. Because I remember when I was a kid, 5, 6, 7 maybe, a little older than that, I always believed in God. I believed there was a God. I was raised in the church. I didn't believe what the church was teaching necessarily, but I believed there was a God. I believed God was all-powerful, and I felt some connection with God. I never really got it that God, you know, cared much about me or had any interest in my life. But I knew in my heart that God existed, and I felt a connection. And then the day I took that drink was the day I began my journey away from that power. And that lasted as long as I drank. And, well, and then sometime after, which I'll tell you why in a minute, but I felt like through my drinking and through the actions I took and the people that I hurt and all that I did, I felt a connection. It was clear. I almost, looking back, I almost felt it slowly slipping away until the day I realized it just was no longer there. And my story is not overly dramatic. Nothing really serious happened as a result of my drinking. Like, I didn't have any major car accident. I was never arrested. I didn't end up on the streets. I mean, I did. I was homeless for a while living in my car, but that's a little bit different. There was nothing real overly dramatic that happened. What happened, what my story is that slowly over time I just lost any connection to God or to myself. And I found myself just lacking a soul, really. That's what it was. I have to tell you this, that when my mom got sober in April 77, and then I started my journey with alcohol in September 77, she started to kind of come to a little bit and look around, and she noticed her youngest son, that's me, was out there drinking and working up a story. So at the age of 15 and 16 and 17, she would say things like this to me. She'd say, James, we're saving a seat for you at AA. I can't wait for you to join me. You can join my home group. I got a great sponsor picked out for you. Oh man, I can't wait for you and I to trudge this road of happy destiny together. And I'm telling you, when I was 15 and 16 and 17 and 18, no way, man. That was the last thing I wanted to hear. So I did not want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. AA was the last place I wanted to be. I remember when I was 14, this is before I started drinking. You know, my mom got sober, and she started to drag my brother and I to the Harbor Club in Fort Worth, Texas, Sunday morning open AA speaker meeting. And I listened to these folks speak, and I figured you guys out really quick. First thing I noticed about AA was it was full of really old people. They had to be like 30, 35. And the second thing is they were kind of just a bunch of losers. I mean, come on, people. I mean, get it together. You can't control your drinking. What's wrong with you? And I thought to myself, this might be okay for my mom, but no way, man. This is not going to be for me. So I resisted. Oh, and by the way, I suffered, as that therapist said, from belligerent defiant. So you tell me to come to AA, I'm like, no way. I may ZZ, but not AA, man. So, I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kind of, I knew from the very beginning that I had this self-knowledge that I'd be an alcoholic if I drank, so I kind of knew it. But, the big book says the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is trying to prove to themselves and others that they can manage their drinking. And that's exactly what I tried to do. And, I can remember her saying that, and I'd say, don't you know who you're talking to? I want to beat this thing. AA's weak. AA's full of weak people like you, Mom. You may have to go to AA, but I'm going to show you I don't have to do that. See, you just watch me. And just to kind of a spoiler alert, I ended up in AA, just so you know. So anyway, so much from what I know. But so again, nothing like any major overly dramatic thing happened. Just slowly over time, I kind of lost connection with myself and God. And at the end of my drinking, what I would do is I'd get whatever I needed for the day. I'd get behind the wheel of my car and I'd just drive around by myself, going nowhere, drinking and driving, which is a terrible thing to do. And that was my life. And what happened for me was, the very end, it was New Year's Eve, 1983. I went to a New Year's Eve party in a house in Fort Worth, Texas, and I got incredibly wasted. And my last memory I had was crawling on the porch of this house, trying to make it to the railing so I could throw up in the bushes because I didn't want to have to throw up anywhere. I had to clean it up, Very respectful, I guess. Anyway, trying to make it to the railing, and I blacked out. And that was sometime New Year's Eve or early morning New Year's Day. And next thing next thing that happened is I came to on January 3rd. And something happened that day. And what happened was is I came to, and I had an incredibly clear mind for the first time in a very long time. And what happened for me was I realized that really for the first time that I was an alcoholic. And I want you to know that I consider this a miracle because I am almost 100% sure that the day before I was not an alcoholic. And I was in a blackout, so I'm not 100% sure, but I almost am. Because I know that on New Year's Eve and the day before that and the day before that, I was not an alcoholic. And moreover, I wanted to be drunk. And this morning I came to and I realized I was an alcoholic. And the second thing was I realized is I wanted to be sober. And I didn't realize this at the time, but to me that was a true miracle. Because there's nothing that I did for that. I don't remember doing anything. I remember asking for that or praying to God for that. At this point, I didn't have any connection with that, so that was completely out of my life. But what happened was I came to it, and it was there. And what I didn't know this at the time, but looking back, what I believe happened, this is my belief based on my experience, is that God surrendered me that morning. And I came to that morning and I was like, it's over. I'm done. I give up. I surrender. And, then I realized, man, I want to be sober. And I thought to myself, geez, I'm 21 and a half. Now, by the way, back then, 77, I was in Texas. The drinking age was 18. When I turned 18, the drinking age was 18, and then shortly thereafter it moved to 21, but I got grandfathered in, so I'd been legally drinking a while. But anyway, I was, it's like, what do you do, man? You're 21 and a half and alcoholic. I didn't know what to do. So I did something, and it's a very lame thing, so please, y'all, don't judge me. Are you ready? I called my mom. Okay, so I didn't know what else to I said, what do you do? So I called my mom, and I get her on the phone, and I said, hey, Mom, you know, I can believe this, I'm an alcoholic. And she said, James, kidding. Yeah, I knew that. I've been telling you that for years. And I said, and she said, oh, I've been praying for this day. And I went, oh, God, here it comes. And then I said, Mom, I want what you have. I want to be sober. And she said, well, if you want to be sober, I suggest you go to AA. And I said, Mom, I don't want it that bad. And I hung up the phone. Click. No way I was going to come to AA. No way. I did not know this at the time, but here's what happened to me. I come to, and I was surrendered. I give up. Then I call my mom, and 5 minutes later, I take my will back. And that is the power of my ego and its ability to reconstruct itself. 5 minutes happen. Now, I think, this is my belief based on my experience, but I think that had to happen for me. I think I had to, my ego had to reconstruct itself in order for me to take my will back. Because for me, sobriety is not being surrendered by God. Sobriety is really kind of continually, consciously surrendering to God. That's what I think it is for me. So I had to take my will back. I just wish it had been a little bit longer than 5 minutes. But anyway, back my will comes 5 minutes later. I said, I ain't coming to AA. I'm telling you, I don't want to be there. I'm not going to do it. And I didn't. And I didn't for a very long time. After a while, I became what I like to call a fringe member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys ever heard of that fringe member? That's the alcoholic who comes in late at the meeting, leaves early, doesn't get a big book, doesn't get a sponsor, no way they're going to pray, fellowship, forget about it. And I would just, just come and take up a seat and then get the heck out of there. And I used to sit in the back row of the meetings. Do you guys know what the back row is called? It's called the shoe section, because that's where all the loafers and the sneakers and the slippers sit. And by the way, that joke's a lot funnier when you're in a room and there are people actually in the back row back there. But anyway, I've learned my jokes fall flat in this online environment. So anyway, I was sitting in the back row and I was just waiting to take a drink, really. And what happened was, another miracle occurred in my life, because I got a phone call from a woman who my mom sponsored, who I knew quite well. I knew her kids. I used to party with her kids. And she asked me to take one of her sponsees to a meeting. This is someone I didn't want to. I was busy. I had other stuff going on. I don't know what it was, but I'm sure it was super important. And I said, I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And I'm telling you, I didn't want to do that. Why would I take someone else to an AA meeting? It's not going to solve my problem and help me at all. You know, I was always about what's in it for me. And what happened this night, and I think this was, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was at least 11 months after my last drink in December. Now, let me tell you about this. These months. I think it may have been longer. I don't even know. But it was a long time, because these were months where I was not drinking, because I knew on January 3rd that I was done. God just took alcohol from my life. And I knew I was done. But I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't go. I certainly didn't start working the program or anything serious. So what happened that day on January 3rd was God separated me from the only solution I'd ever found to my problem. And I didn't replace it with anything else. And I don't know if any of y'all have done that, but let me tell you something. It was the worst part. It was the worst time of my entire life. I had never been so sick. I was sick mentally and emotionally and spiritually. And I kept getting sicker and sicker. I had this idea in my mind that, hey, man, I'm done drinking. That's it. Everything's going to be good. And it wasn't good. It was worse. And this is why I believe that I'm an alcoholic. This has really showed me my alcoholism. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. I identify what's described in the big book. I have the mind of an alcoholic. It was just, a lot of insanity there. And I also had the physical allergy. And the way that manifests for me is that when I drink, at the end of my drinking anyway, I could not predict what I was going to do. I could either have just a few or I'd lose 3 days. There's no way I could predict that. So I identify with what's described there. But the other thing that I identify with is what's talked about in the doctor's opinion, where it talks about men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. And what alcohol did for me was it fixed me. And when I was separated from alcohol, that solution was removed. And it didn't replace with anything else. I kept getting sicker and sicker. And so here I find myself taking a stranger to an AA meeting. And I sit at this table, and right across from me sat the guy who was going to be the speaker. And he looked a lot like me. He was about my age. And he was on fire for AA, man. And that guy gave me hope. I finally heard somebody tell my story. And I filled with hope, and I joined AA that day. And I say that I went to, you know what happened to me? I went to one meeting too many, right? I showed up at this meeting, and a miracle happened, literally a miracle happened. So I like to say that I'm a guy for whom miracles can occur without my consent. I didn't want to get sober. I didn't want to join AA, and as a result of miracles, I am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to this day. That day I joined, and I began to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life is really, really amazing. It's kind of hard to summarize 36 years of recovery in, what I have, 13 minutes now. I'll tell you some of the high points. I sobered up at 21 and a half. I was a college dropout. And luckily, I'd never heard in an AA meeting, don't make too many changes all at once. Because I changed everything. But by the way, that's not in the big book anywhere. The big book says the results are nil until we let go. Absolutely. So I have to change a lot. Anyway, I immediately went back to school, found that I was pretty smart. You know, we alcoholics are pretty smart. Have you heard that? I've heard that. In AA meetings, and they say that alcoholics have above average intelligence. You guys hear that? I also heard that you don't hear that in Al-Anon meetings, but you hear them in AA meetings. But anyway, I did real well, graduated, got a job. I became self-supporting through my own contributions. Got another job offer up in Illinois, so I was living in Texas at the time when I graduated. So I moved up to Illinois to work for this company and lived there for 28 years. And so what happened there, I met a woman, fell in love, got married, had kids, bought a house, all that kind of stuff. And, life was going along as planned by me. And, life was good. But life has a way of happening, sober or not. And some challenging things were presented to me. One of which is my oldest son, his name is Ryan, was born deaf, and that was a very challenging experience. I remember when I found out, I was really angry with God. My thing was, you know, God, don't you know who I am? What is this about? Don't you know what I'm doing down here? I'm working hard for AA. I'm carrying the message. I'm sponsoring all these people. And I have this kid, and he's deaf. And let me tell you, I had a lot of fear about what his life would be like. And I want to tell you this. This is very important that you hear this. My fear and my attitude about that was based in ignorance. I was very, very ignorant about what that meant. I had this idea in my mind, and I don't know about any of you, but when I get an idea in my mind, I don't have to check with anybody because I know it's right. And my idea, I'm sure none of y'all relate to that, right? And my idea was this: his life is going to be small, and he's going to have, you know, this little job, and that's going to be his life. And I want you to know I was very, very wrong. Very wrong. Happy to say that. Oh, by the way, one of the characteristics of this alcoholic is I don't like to say when I'm wrong. But I want you to know that through sobriety and recovery in AA, I like to admit when I'm wrong now. I'm wrong a lot, and I like to admit it. I had a sponsor, his name was Keith, and he used to tell me, to the extent that I can be wrong is the extent that I can be free. And I was wrong about him. I'll just real quick tell you that how wrong I was. He graduated from the high school. We lived in Evanston, Illinois. He graduated from Evanston High School. It was about 3,000 kids. He was the only deaf kid there. He went to Evanston for 2 years. Then he went to the high school with all the other deaf kids for the last 2 years. Then he went to college at Rochester Institute of Technology. He studied civil engineering. I remember, because I'm kind of a math is one of my favorite subjects, and I said to him, "Do you ever have any, you know, need math help? Just ask me. I'm happy to help you out." And that lasted about two semesters. Then he got way beyond what I knew. So it was a tough school. I don't think I could have done his program. But anyway, so he graduated as a civil engineer, and, you know, he's been working. And I thought, little job, boy, was I wrong there. And I thought, yeah, this life would be so small. And boy, was I wrong. This kid has traveled the world. I'll never forget, he said to me once, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to go to Indonesia for 3 weeks." And I said, "Who are you going with?" And he said, "Well, I was going to go with my girlfriend, but she can't go, so I'm going to go by myself." I thought to myself, you know, he was, what, 20, 21 maybe? I thought, man, when I was 21, I can hear just fine. There's no way I would have gone to Indonesia by myself. No way. And he went. And that's just the kind of life he had. So that's the kind of extent to which I can be wrong. So, and acknowledging that has given me a lot of freedom, by the way. So, three kids. And then some other life things happened. Lost my dad to cancer, lost that marriage. So, you know, lots of, and then, you know, jobs come and go, and, you know, just life stuff happens sober. And the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that the program teaches me how to live one day at a time through all of that. And I have this mind that says that, you know, some things in life are good and some things are bad, and I want the good and I don't want any of the bad. And all that good, bad stuff is judgment that my mind puts on the events of life. And some of the so-called bad things, the things that I judge to be bad, turned out to be my greatest gift. So what do I know? So I just try to accept life as it comes. So I've been given some tremendous gifts from Alcoholics Anonymous. in sobriety. I have, I now live in Florida. I have a beautiful home. I'm married to a beautiful woman. She is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe she spoke at this group some weeks ago. Is that right, Tim? Yeah. Her name's Jane. She's amazing. She has an amazing story. She is my favorite AA sister, by the way. And, you know, we're going through this really challenging time as a nation and a world, and I'm so lucky because I get to shelter in place with Jane. I mean, yeah, super lucky. But anyway, I love my kids. I have a great job that I love. I'm pretty good at. I have one of those jobs where I've been working from home for like 6 years. So when all this happened, it was like, yeah, just another day of work for me. Truly a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. All those things, as wonderful as they are, they're not the best thing that AA has given me. The best thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is promised me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is, if I do the steps, then it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And that's what I had. When I came to AA, and that connection that I had to God was gone. I liken it, I think of this as sort of as a metaphor, that there's, like, right here behind my sternum, inside, it's like a candle is lit when I was a kid. And that candle was kind of like the light of God or spirit or whatever. And then through my drinking and the terrible things that I did and the people that I hurt, tornado that I lived through other people's lives, it was as though that candle got blown out. It just blew it out. And I found myself, you know, New Year's Eve 1983, crawling across the floor of this front porch in Fort Worth, Texas, completely devoid of anything inside. I was just felt like I was dead inside. And what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that back. And my one of my favorite AA speakers is a guy named Chuck Chamberlain. And he used to say that Alcoholics Anonymous is about uncovering, discovering, and discarding. And through the process of the steps, what I found was that that candle inside, I thought the light was burnt out. It wasn't. It was just covered up. And so when I uncovered it, I found that that light was always there, but that I had covered it up. And I've learned in AA that I cannot blow that candle out. I can cover it up. What's the word that's used in the book? Obscured, is that it? By pomp, calamity, and worship of other things. So I can obscure it with those things. You know, pomp is me thinking I'm a big shot, trying to show you that, and calamity is the wreckage that's surrounding me based on my actions, and then worship of other things is alcohol and drugs and money and everything else that I worship. And so I can cover it up. I can obscure it, but I can't make it go away, because that is really the nature of who I am. Big Book says that deep within every man, woman, child is the fundamental idea of God. That's how I see it within myself. Is this candle that is lit and burns. And I'm going to tell you, one thing my sponsor tells me with somewhat regularity is he says, I'm an alcoholic every single day. And the minute I stop addressing my alcoholism is the minute it starts addressing me. And so there are moments where I am not on the beam, that I'm in my head and alcoholism is happening in my life. And it's those moments where I think perhaps maybe the candle appears to be covered a bit. But the good news is all I have to do is focus my attention on the steps and it just comes right back. Because it never goes away. It can't go away. It's the nature of who I am. So the God of my understanding that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is ever present. It's love. The times that I feel the presence of that power the most is when I'm working one-on-one with another alcoholic. And, you know, it's challenging times now to do that. I do a lot over the phone or online like we're doing here. And but I tell you, it never fails to connect me back to that power. You know, through my recovery, through my years of recovery, I keep getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And I'm just going to stick around here and see what the rest of today brings. And Tim, I really appreciate you asking me to share. And I know I'm out of time, so I'm going to say thank you. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, James. You shared with us tonight how you got sober, why you got sober, how you stay sober. And it's the steps, it's the steps, it's the steps. And I'm so glad that you are wrong about your son. That's huge. That is so huge. I know you're a proud daddy. I'm a proud daddy, too. We got that in common as well as our alcoholism. I'm going to unmute people and let them say some things, and then we're going to mute back up. And
I'm Isla. I want to say thank you, James. That was an awesome story. And you said so many things that I related with about where God lives and how we tried, how hard you tried for that oblivion. And I had reached the point where I couldn't pass that. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. Mm-hmm. So, but I totally agree with you that light, you can't get away from God because where he, she is, mm-hmm. deep within. But it was just an awesome, awesome story. And I wanted to ask, actually, it didn't fall on deaf ears, that joke you told about the people in the back row. And I know that I heard that it was slippers and loafers, and what was the other one?
Sneakers.
I thought that was it. We were just muted. It did not fall on deaf ears.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
Excellent job. I appreciate it so much. And I'm dying to know your actual birthday because I, too, was 21 and a half in January of 1981.
June 11, 62.
Okay. You're younger than I am. Okay. By a year.
Okay. But,
so maybe I got to do my math. Maybe my math is wrong.
Yeah, I got sober on January 84.
Oh, 84. Okay. Yeah, there's where my math was. Okay, yeah, there you go. But anyway, no, what a great story, and I agree. I love the one of my favorite lines in that book is deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, because I looked all over,
Amen.
And it was there the whole time. Amen. So, but a great story. Thank you so much for sharing it.
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Appreciate that.
How long have you and Jane been married?
Let's see. What's the date? The 3rd. 3 days ago was 4 years.
All right.
You two must be a dynamic duo.
We enjoy each other very much. We fit together very well.
And she does have a whale of a story too.
She does, boy. She has a story, and she tells it beautifully too.
Well, it's a small world. So you know, Keith Lewis, what a wonderful fellow to be sponsored by.
I loved him so much.
I mean, there are probably, I don't know, I might have 30 different cassettes of Keith Lewis that in one way or another. Spend the weekend with Keith Lewis, go through the steps with Keith Lewis. I mean, what a great guy.
Mona, would you like to share?
Yeah, I just had to say one thing he said really stuck in my mind, and it's so true. I'm going to try to quote him. He said, the day I stopped thinking about addressing, no, he said, the day I stopped addressing my alcohol started addressing me. And I don't know why, but something went through me when he said that. I really needed to hear that tonight. I really did. The day I stopped addressing my alcohol and think that I got to you know, I'm okay, I get stressed out and stuff like that. The day that I don't address it is the day that it addresses me. And the way I took it is that it's an ongoing thing. Never get too cocky. Never think you're, you know, you've got it licked or whatever. I have to address it every day because it's very easy to slip, especially now for me. Because I guess you could say I'm on a pity party or whatever, you know, the COVID and everything else. I don't know. But I have to remember one thing. If I don't remember anything else, whatever happens in my life, if I do not pick up and I just hold on to God's hands and I allow for him to hold on to me, I got a shot. And when he said that, I said, I'm going to write that down and remember. The day I stop addressing my alcohol is the day that it starts addressing me. Thank you for that. I needed to hear that. Thanks.
Just another homesick child, tired of running wild, ready to stand trial and move on. Though I'm guilty in your sight, have some mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets insane and the lessons full of pain, keep me calling out your name with love. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.